listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Rose Manley.
Hi, Richard. Relegated already.
And Orla Shinawy.
Hello. That took me by surprise.
That threw you, didn't it? Not expecting that. You, by popular request, Rose, you've been bumped up the pecking order.
No.
It's like a film poster.
Well,
when you get...
hang on a minute. If we were working by popular request, you would have been bumped right down.
That's
why are you
true.
Starting the
well,
show?
Well, it might happen. I might eliminate myself from this podcast. I'm a bit under the weather.
Yeah.
You can probably hear that. And so I'm not sure my voice is going to last this entire episode.
Let's hope not, eh?
Like, how's your Scottish accent?
Oh, I the new...
That's just alienated that audience. But
no, I used to live in Scotland, actually. I should be able to do it better than that. Give me something to say.
That's not my job.
That's Orla. Not my job, Orla. No, let's just move on.
God, what a terrible start. This is April. We're now well into the season. Cycling podcast Femina. We've got lots of interviews this month. We'll hear from some of the main protagonists in some of the recent races. And, well, let's start with your news roundup, Orla.
Right, we'll go from Dwarsdorf-Vlaanderen, shall we? Second race win of the year there for Ellen van Dijk from Team Sunweb after Omloop van Het Hageland. She went on a solo attack again with her signature late race move, this time with about 7 kilometres to go. Little surprise that the 2013 World Time Trial Champion was able to solo to the line from there. Three times winner Amy Peters from Bols Dolmans won the sprint for second ahead of Fleur de Mackay from Sunweb. Third, so a Sunweb 1 and 3 on the podium. Then on to the Tour of Flanders.
Sorry, I was thinking, we're talking about Scotland. I was thinking Fleur de Mackay sounds like a very Scottish name.
I know it does slightly, doesn't it? Fleur de Mackay. But she's not Scottish. Anyway, Tour of Flanders.
We'll claim her.
yeah, like you, I know, like you claim everyone. Hodge.
Yeah.
Can't claim anyone, I don't think, in the next one. No, even at a stretch. We've had 5 editions of the Tour of Flanders, 5 different winners so far from 4 different teams, and another winner, Olympic champion Anna van der Breggen. She's already won a World Tour race this year with a long solo attack. She went 20 kilometres out to win Strade Bianche. This time she went with 27 kilometres to go. She went actually from a spot that the peloton should have been wary of. It was pretty much where Elisa Longoborghini and Ellen van Dijk made their race-winning moves whenever they won, 2015 and 2014. From a chase group of 9, Amy Peters of Bols Dolmans sprinted for second again after Vlaanderen, and she became the new Women's World Tour leader. And Annemiek van Vleuten from Mitchelton Scott came third. So that gave Bols a 1-2. It made it a Dutch 1-2-3. And just very briefly, I wanted to say Bols played an absolute blinder in this race, because when van der Breggen attacked, they had 3 riders in the chase group controlling the action. Earlier in the race, when there'd been a terrible crash at 52 kilometres to go, Christine Mazurus did a wonderful job controlling the pace to allow van der Breggen and Chantal Black to get back on again. So a brilliant team performance there. Incidentally, that crash, I don't know if either of you saw it, terrible to see. One FDJ rider
here,
crashed
that,
into
that's
him.
Because I think I was watching it on the Eurosport player without commentary, and you hear a lot more than from the riders, including when the racing is on and you can hear the shouts. So it's quite visceral, really, to watch it.
I find it
but
quite distressing.
That crash was very distressing. Yeah,
yeah. It was Chloe Hosking who was screaming on the ground, and the camera stayed on her, I thought, quite a while, and certainly allowed the screaming to continue quite a while. If you're a family member watching, that would be very distressing, even as a fan watching it. I don't think we really needed as much of that. But anyway, that was the day before Hosking was due to fly out to the Commonwealth Games, which he did remarkably. More on that race in a bit. But also in that crash, Annemiek van Vleuten dislocated her shoulder, popped it back in again herself, and then finished third. I mean, we know how hard a rider she is, but that really just paints a very vivid picture of that. One thing as well, if you watch that race, which you might get to, but did Anna van der Breggen take a gel in the last 5 kilometres? because it looked very much like it. She had a team car coming up beside her, passed something out the window, looked like a gel, the wrapper she threw to the ground, which is against UCI rules, isn't it?
To have a feed.
To have a feed within the last 10 kilometres. Anyway, that's what it looked like to me.
So Anna van der Breggen did win it, but then might be disqualified now on the back of that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see any coverage of it afterwards that mentioned that, which I was a bit surprised by. Anyway, watch it, see what you think. Amstel Gold then. The Dutch world champion Chantal Black from Boels Dolmans took a home victory against Lucinda Brand of Team Sunweb and Amanda Spratt from Mitchelton Scott. Black's win making it 4 wins for Boels Dolmans from 7 World Tour races with 3 different riders. So remarkable. A brilliant race from Amanda Spratt as well. She was just back from having the flu. She had to sit out Gent-Wevelgem and the Tour of Flanders. Flanders had been a big target of hers. So brilliant recovery from her and a first World Tour Classics podium for the Australian. Flesh Wallonne. Again, no live coverage of this race, as we saw last year. Really disappointing, because it looked like a brilliant race, just as we've seen dominance in the men's Flesh Wallonne with Alejandro Valverde. Until this year, at least, we see the same rider win the women's version for what is now 4 years in a row. Anna van der Breggen proving unbeatable on the Mur de Huy once again to win her 4th consecutive Flesh Wallonne. Ashley Mulman-Passio took 2nd for Savello Bigla and Megan Guarnier was 3rd. So another Boels 1-3. And the win moved van der Breggen back into the purple jersey for the women's world tour leader, at which she won, of course, outright last year. And a great result for Mulman-Passio as well, who finished in the podium for the first time at a World Tour race since finishing 2nd at a stage of the Women's Tour 2 years ago. And she hasn't been on the podium of a World Tour Classic since Flesh in 2013. So good ride from her. Liège-Bastogne-Liège, again, no live TV coverage. We'll get to that in a bit. We've got the final 200 metres of action during the men's race, which the commentators clearly hadn't been warned about. So they're not following the race. They see the riders charging towards the line. No idea of the context. They might as well not have bothered, I think, quite frankly. But Anna van der Breggen with the win again, continuing her dominance of the Ardennes Classics. She said it'd be impossible to replicate her triple from last year, but she won 2 out of 3. And that's after after winning Flanders as well. So arguably at least as impressive. Amanda Spratt went one better than Amstel Gold to finish 2nd, which is her greatest result of her career in the Classics. And Annemiek van Vleuten of Mitchelton Scott finishing 3rd, winning a 2-up sprint against Ashley Mulman-Passio. And then Commonwealth Games, just briefly, Chloe Hosking after that horrific crash at Flanders did get on the plane, did get down to Australia and back on the top step of the podium down under. She's had so many podiums in Europe, but no wins since the Cadel Evans road race. Georgia Williams of New Zealand 2nd and Danny Rowe 3rd there. She switched allegiance to Wales after marrying Matt Rowe, Luke Rowe's brother. So a first medal for her under the Welsh flag. Hosking won after a lead out from her team captain, Tiffany Cromwell, who we'll hear from a little bit later. And then in the time trial, 4 years on from claiming bronze in the time trial, Katrin Garfoot took a dominant victory on home soil, defeating defending champion Linda Willemsen by 54 seconds. And the bronze medal went to Hayley Simmons of England. And just one footnote to that particular race, a terrible situation for England's Mel Lowther, who flew out to Australia specifically to compete in the time trial, only to discover that British Cycling, I believe, were responsible for Team England's application, hadn't filled in her forms properly. So she didn't get to compete in the time trial after peaking for it in her early season. She did compete in the road race, which wasn't her aim, but a terrible situation for her. And that, my friends, I think, is the news roundup.
No, wow. No track racing at the Commonwealth Games.
Well, the thing is, we didn't cover the track racing from the Worlds in my news roundup, and we discussed that. And so I thought, well, do I break with what we've established now as protocol when the Commonwealth Games aren't as big as the Worlds? And I know you want to do it because of Katie Archibald, but
if we can't have Flirty Mackay, we've at least got
I did think with that news roundup I will have waxed on fine. For more
yeah
than
I think
enough.
It was a long enough so. News roundup. All the results from the track race at Commonwealth Games are on Wikipedia. Oh dear.
And tattooed on your back.
There'll be complaints about that. But we are focused. I mean, there has been a lot of top class road racing. Some of it we've even been able to watch on the telly box. And because we weren't able to see Flesh Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège, I thought it was well worth getting a report from one of the protagonists in Flesh Wallonne and, well, Liège-Bastogne-Liège as well. We're going to hear from Ashley Mulman-Passio in a moment, the Savello Bigla rider from South Africa. She was 2nd to Anna van der Breggen at Flesh Wallonne. And it's, you know, fourth win in a row for Anna van der Breggen, but it's the closest she's been pushed, and it's the nearest anybody's come to beating her up there in the last few years. And it was a really thrilling finish. The door seemed to be closed to Mulman Passio, and it just opened, and she had a go. And we'll hear in a moment, you know, what it felt like to, as she put it, almost be able to taste victory. So here she is, Ashley Mulman Passio.
Flesh is a special race for me. It's always sort of held a special place in my heart. And yeah, it's a race that I fell in love with the very first year I took part, which is 2011. And in that first edition that I took part in, I actually crashed on the technical descent, which we do now, just before the Sharaf. And I was out of contention, but I was right up there in my very first edition. Yeah, I mean, it's always been a race that has suited me and that I've always wanted to win. And my best result so far was third place in 2013. So this year, of course, the objective was to win. I could almost taste it, you know, and so that makes me even more hungry, you know, to come back in future years and to win, because it was a tough final circuit with three climbs. And yeah, going up the Côte Sharaf the first time, there was a really hot pace going into it from Canyon SRAM. They already forced it on the technical descent and then, you know, up into the climb. And that wasn't really a problem for me. But as we came over the top, I realized that I was alone and I was isolated. I didn't have teammates, but other teams had more than one rider. This is where already I could see, ooh, this is looking a bit dangerous. And then just as I thought, a breakaway went, and it had Bulls, it had Canyon, and it had Mitchell and Scott, and that was a dangerous move. After the Mille de Huy, Cecily Ludwig came back, and she did an incredible job to control the gap to the breakaway. She really, really emptied herself, because there wasn't much cooperation. I actually went up to Sunweb and to Wiggle and said, so what are you going to do? Are you going to chase? And both of them actually came back to me and said, no, going into the Côte de Sharaf for the last time, she really went deep to limit the gap. And as we entered it, I passed her and I knew she was done. And now it was finally all up to me. It was a very tactical sort of situation, because if the gap was brought down too fast and we rejoined the front group, then this attack counterattack would just happen all over again. So we tried to time it in such a way that it happened literally on the meet, and that all worked out exactly according to plan. So as we entered into the meet for the final time, we could see the four riders just ahead of us. It was just a couple of meters, and yeah, that's when I already started to go on the front to make sure that we joined sooner rather than later, because the mirror is quite a special case. You know, if you really have to do it carefully, because if you go too hard at the bottom, you can completely blow at the top, and you can go from being first to finishing out of the top 20. So it's a really special line, you know, between giving it your all but without emptying the tank. And as we caught them, that's when I started to feel that I was becoming a little bit boxed in. You know, I'd actually done some homework the days before to see what riders like Valverde and the specialists do on the Mille de Huy, to see where they go. And I'd kind of pinpointed my spot where I wanted to go. And this was, you know, to still keep it into my strengths, which is to use the steep part, but not too soon that I blew before the finish line. And so at the very moment where I really knew that I wanted to go, I found myself completely boxed in. So that was for me quite a frustrating experience. You know, I knew inside that's what I really wanted to go, but there was just no way out. And so finally, when I managed to force my way out, it had already flattened off, and you know, my ultimate spot had come and gone. It's the first time that I really felt that Bulls felt really threatened.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
So that was Ashley Moolman Passio. Interesting as ever, her insight into what happened in Flesh Alone. Essential as well to get that, because we didn't see much of it. We did see the final climb, and it was, you know, it was touch and go, really. A really exciting finish to the race, because I was going to ask, I mean, Anna van der Breggen has been quite dominant on the face of it, and Flanders in particular. When you watched her, the way that she won that, you think, you know, when there's one dominant rider like that, the races aren't that often that exciting. But Flesh Alone was really exciting, and it is a finish that really suits Ashley Moolman, and she's obviously proven that she's very strong there. But some really interesting insights. She studied Valverde and others and where they went on the Mur de Huy before the race, which was interesting, and the moment for her to go on the steepest part was kind of lost. You wonder how aware van der Breggen was of that, you know, when she was pinning her to the barriers and the way that she was. But also interesting on Bulls Doelmans. I mean, again, on the face of it, it's a very similar story to last year when it was van der Breggen and Lizzie Deignan who were up there in all the Ardennes classics. And this year the cast has changed a little bit, but they just look just as strong.
Yeah, and it just begs the question how you can beat them, really, because I mentioned their dominance in Flanders as well, and it's right through the team with Majerus controlling the race to bring van der Breggen and Chantal Black back. And you look at, I think during Flanders at one stage, you had Amy Peters in one chasing group, you had Chantal Black, the world champion, in another. And they just have that strategy absolutely nailed down, and they can because of the quality of the riders they've got. And I was listening to Rochelle Gilmore, who was commentating on Flanders, and she was alluding to what we had mentioned a few episodes ago when we were talking about Marianne Vos and maybe why she's not so dominant these days. And that's because with women's racing now, you really do need the strong team to be able to win. And that's partly because Bols Doelmans operate that strategy so incredibly well. But it was interesting that she said that she doesn't believe that van der Breggen is necessarily the strongest rider, or at least as strong a rider as her results would suggest. Again, you know, saying that she's able to benefit from the dominance of her team. And we saw it last year at Flesh Alone, certainly when we were there, Richard. Lizzie put in such a huge turn at the front to finish second. So it was van der Breggen who made the most of that. And they're just an incredibly difficult team to beat, you know. So many wins this season from different riders. We keep saying that maybe this season will be the season where their dominance is broken. It doesn't seem to be on the horizon just yet, does it?
But I think that's why Flesh Alone is so interesting, because Moolman was only 2 seconds behind at the finish line. And I think as much as you need a really good team in Flesh Alone to set you up, and I think like last year when Anna won, she had a huge gap when she was on the Muir. But I think this year what you see is the Muir can only help you so much if you have a good team. Because you can get a good team can take you right up there, but then when that last person peels off, you really need to perform and sprint up some horrendous incline. And if you don't have it, then you're not going to win. I think that's why maybe van der Breggen only won by 2 seconds, where in the past she has won by a huge amount more. Because if you're still together right at that point, then the team can't help you, because it's so steep, it's so attritional. And I think that's a good sign that Ashley was really strong and only 2 seconds behind.
And who knows if she'd been able to attack where she wanted to attack, the result might well have been different. But that's bike racing too. And Anna van der Breggen was in the right position, and position is so important on the Mur de Huy as well. And she rode an excellent race. We should mention that one of the things that Anna van der Breggen said in her post race interview was about the team mechanic Richard Stieg, the Bols Doelmans mechanic, who suffered a heart attack the day before the race. They were sharing a hotel with Team Sky, and I think their medical staff attended to him. A lot of people who have a heart attack die, you know, without medical attention. He fortunately was lucky and survived. Now, we know about Richard Stieg because he is one of the people who brings women's racing to life, as well as being a mechanic for the team. He's fantastic to follow on Twitter because he live tweets the race. And, you know, usually that's the best coverage of women's racing is often from the back of the Bols Doelmans car. So he's recovering, and we wish him well.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast Femina. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. I went into Science and Sport recently armed with a lot of listeners' questions, and I met with Dr. Rob Child, their Chief Scientific Officer, and I put some of those questions to him. Let's hear one of them now. So our question, Rob, is from Morgan Fraga. I've been a recreational endurance athlete for about 10 years, splitting my time between running, cycling and swimming. This year, my husband and I are working on growing our family. What additional considerations should I have with respect to nutrition and hydration while pregnant?
The first thing is focus on your nutrition before you actually want to conceive. So one of the key things to consume is folic acid, which helps prevent neural tube defects. And the second thing to focus on is regularly consuming omega-3 fatty acids. So these are the fatty acids that are found in oily fish, such as salmon, mackerel, fresh tuna, and sardines. And they're actually important for neurological development in the baby. One of the things that you should avoid is vitamin A supplements, because that's been related to birth defects. And just generally, you should focus on consuming a varied diet that includes vegetables, fruit, dairy products, and meat and fish. The easiest way to ensure that you get adequate intake of most of the vitamins and minerals during pregnancy and before pregnancy is to take a multivitamin that includes a fish oil supplement to provide EPA and DHA, which are the omega-3 fats that are most important.
So that was Rob Child answering Morgan Fraga's question about nutrition when you're pregnant. We're still wanting more questions from you. Do send them to contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. If you've got questions about your own nutrition or indeed the pros' nutrition, we're going to put some questions to some riders as well. So contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. Orla, you would have been interested in that answer.
Well, I'm not pregnant. I didn't have anything to declare. Something to declare. Yeah. Thank you. I'd like to use this occasion to announce I am not pregnant.
You have been pregnant. You have been.
Yes. And actually, that is one of the things as well. Whenever you're pregnant, or I guess trying to get pregnant, it becomes an obsession Googling the latest advice on what you can and can't eat. And it changes so often and so many times over the generations that it's quite difficult to keep on top of things. But yeah, that was very interesting, actually. A good question. I liked it.
Lots more where that came from. We'll hear more of those questions in the regular podcast and in Podcast Femina. Moving on to Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Ashley Moulin-Passio, we heard from earlier. She was one of the strong riders in that race as well and finished just off the podium in fourth. We're going to hear from Amanda Spratt in a moment. She was second and at one point, you know, looked in a quite good position to maybe try and win it. You mentioned Annemiek van Vleuten earlier at the Tour of Flanders. Marianne Vos at Liège-Bastogne-Liège crashed and broke her collarbone and finished the race, which is quite remarkable. She'll be out now for a bit, but pretty tough to finish the race with a broken collarbone.
I know. Yeah, she fractured it in a crash. We again, another rider that we know to be particularly tough, and that just shows to what extent. I'd be crying like a baby on the side of the road.
I noticed that pulling on the handlebar did not go very well.
Love the level of understatement. Yeah. Yeah. Did not go very well, as in I was in effing agony.
Excellent. Right. Well, let's hear from Amanda Spratt, the Australian rider who missed the Commonwealth Games, you know, and that was, as she tells us, quite a big decision, but finished second at Liège-Bastogne-Liège and has had a great start to the year. Here she is, Amanda Spratt. So Amanda, terrific result at Liège, second, but talk me through the closing stages of the race, if you would.
Yeah, certainly very happy with second. We really knew in the race it was going to kind of all split apart, probably on the Rochefoucauld climb. So the main aim there was just to try and follow and still be there in the front. When we got towards the top of that climb, I guess there was probably 10 or 11 of us there, and there were quite a few attacks, and I just saw a moment and I thought, okay, sometimes, yeah, the best form of defence is to attack. So I just took my moment and got a gap straight away, and I knew it was a good situation when we have someone like Annemiek van Vleuten in the team and she was in that group behind. So she could get a free ride and I was working at the front, and my gap just kept going out, and I knew if I could get to St. Nicholas Climb with a decent gap, then there's a good chance I could hang on. And I knew people like Anna and Ashley would really have to attack hard on that climb to get across to me, which they did, and Anna got across to me, and I was really hoping Annemiek would still be there, but she couldn't hang on. She was behind with Ashley, yeah, I think when you see the Olympic champion and world number one come across to you, then it's a little bit of nerves. But I'd already done a lot of work, but having Annemiek behind, I knew I could just sit on her. And yeah, Anna was riding hard. And yeah, to be honest, I was hoping I could just hang on to her wheel up that final drag. But yeah, it's only 1.4K, I think it is, up that drag to the finish line, but it felt like forever. And she just started going hard, and I couldn't hold her wheel. And she got a gap on me, and it just, yeah, it stayed that way. And I came second.
I mean, Anna van der Breggen obviously has been completely dominant in these races, but and her team as well. And on paper, it looks like her team is as strong as ever. But in that moment, it looked like you were playing Bulls Dolmans at their own game a little bit with, as you say, Van Vleuten behind and you up the road.
Yeah, exactly. And I think probably this season in particular, the strength is kind of spread across more teams. So I think they're still getting great results, but they're not as dominant as maybe what they have been in previous seasons. You see a team like Canyon Tram as well really attacking and putting it to them. And certainly with Annemiek and I both there in the final, we were able to do that. And I got the communication on the radio that it was only Annemiek and Ashley behind, that Anna didn't have any teammates. So I knew that Anna, it was up to her basically to get the results. So that meant I could just sit on her and get a free ride essentially. But she was just too strong for me in the end.
So you were happy in the end, I guess, to be in the Ardennes and not on the Gold Coast at the Commonwealth Games?
Yeah, in the end it really justified my decision, I guess. It was a decision that took a while to make, actually, probably a good few months. My coach, Dean Bates, first sort of brought out the idea in August last year, and I hated the idea at the time. I just thought he was stupid for saying that, and it took a good few months of thinking about it and just trying to work out what would be best for me in my cycling career. And I'm not really young anymore. I'm at that kind of point in my career where I want to prioritise and get the most out of myself. So yeah, I did. I chose not to put my hand up for selection. Australia have a really strong group of riders anyway, so there's no guarantee I'd be there. But certainly coming to the Ardennes and targeting it and getting three top five finishes and the second in Liège it makes me very comfortable and happy that I made that decision.
I mean, I know the World Championships is a big, big goal for you this year. The race in the Ardennes must make you confident for that race. Do you know the course at all? Have you been to look at it, or will you have a look at it?
I was quite excited when I saw it was in Innsbruck, and I actually took a trip there in October at the end of the season last year. I caught the train and did a little bikepacking trip actually by myself on the weekend to go and ride around the course. So I was probably carrying a little bit of off-season weight and plus my bikepacking stuff, so probably I don't know how many kilos extra than race day, but I've ridden the course. I know it's really hard. It's definitely a climber's course for us, but I think having already seen it, I have a good idea of what the demands are and the kind of shape I'm going to have to be in. So my next goal is the Giro Rosa and then the Worlds after that. So certainly I think having great races in the Ardennes was a really good start, and certainly to perform in these sort of world-class one-day races as well.
You've seen Anna van der Breggen up close, obviously, and the world title is the one that's missing for her as well. And the Dutch team, of course, is very strong, but as you say, it's a strong Australian team as well. Is she beatable? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I think she's definitely beatable. I think she's not superhuman. Of course, she's very strong, and at the moment, I think, she's definitely the strongest rider out there, and she's a smart rider too. She knows when to use her energy, and she has a great team around her, but I think everyone's still beatable on their day. I mean, she doesn't have a perfect race every time she lines up, so we have to take confidence in our own ability and not focus too much on just her. I mean, the whole Dutch team is strong. You probably wouldn't want to let too many of them get up the road either. But I think with Australian cycling, we've got some really strong climbers now as well. Myself, Shara Gillow, who was ninth in Liège, is going really well. My teammate Lucy Kennedy, who unfortunately crashed out at Amstel Gold, but she's a really super climbing talent. So I think we can definitely go to Innsbruck with a really strong team.
And you just after winning Tour Down Under this year, did you not graduate as well?
Yeah, so finally took me about 8 or 9 years. I graduated, so I've been doing a Bachelor of Communications, majoring in Public Relations. So finally graduated from that 9 years later. So it's been a slow and steady one subject at a time battle. But it's great to get that done. And I think the graduation ceremony is actually in July, but I'm going to defer it so I can actually attend in November in Australia. So that's going to be a special moment, I think, just to have achieved that as well.
Yeah, it must feel like a bit of a weight off, does it?
It does, yeah. It's kind of one of those things for so many years, it's always kind of on the back of your mind. You're away at races and you know you have this assessment due or that assessment, or, you know, have this many subjects left to go. So, yeah, to finally finish it, it was one of those things that just felt like a never-ending battle, actually, to finish it. You never felt like you were getting any closer to finally finish it. It's a really big achievement, something I'm proud of.
And what's next for you, Amanda? You mentioned the Giro. Is that the next big target for you?
Yeah, so the Giro is the next big target for me. Now I have like a little bit of a holiday or break. I'm in Switzerland now, and then I go to Germany for a few more days, and then we head to Valencia for a team camp. And that, straight off the back of that, will be Macumin Bira, the next World Tour race for me. And then everything's geared towards the Giro after that. So I'm going to have a really solid training block. And then hope to come out firing for the Giro.
So it was Amanda Spratt, the Mitchelson Scott rider, having a really good season and second at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. As she said, that vindicated her decision to miss the Commonwealth Games, which is always a big decision for Australian riders. And some other interesting stuff just about, you know, she's graduated finally, and that's been a long haul, and she's had a look at the World Road Race at Innsbruck as well, so quite like the idea of her taking off with her backpack and old school, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I love that. You wouldn't see any of the guys doing that, would you?
I'm struggling to think.
Peter Sagan on.
We had Mika Kruger on last year, the German professional rider. And she's a big fan of backpacking trips in the winter. She takes herself off touring as part of her kind of pre-season training. But you don't hear of many professional riders. Lawrence Ten Dam is another one who quite likes riding his bike for fun.
Yeah. Imagine the very concept.
But imagine doing Innsbruck. Of all the places, I would just go somewhere very flat. Netherlands, just for a nice little holiday. Imagine doing a holiday going up the hills in Innsbruck.
Mm. On that particular race though, Richard, I've got my, we're recording this at my house this time around, aren't we? So I didn't even have to bring it with me. I've got my soapbox ready for you to
virtual soapbox.
Because you had a few things as well. One thing in particular that you
I think this was about Flesh Wallone, actually. This was Flesh Wallone.
Well, I'll bring a different soapbox. There's your Flesh Wallone soapbox then.
We were talking about this earlier. On social media on Wednesday morning when Flesh Wallone was running, there were some tweets about comparisons between the average speed of the first hour of the men's race and the women's race. And they were very similar. And people were extrapolating from that lots of stuff. And I find, you know, talking about average speeds of road races is completely meaningless. And a silly road to go down, I think.
You're speaking with a little less passion than you did in my kitchen earlier, Richard. I feel like you're taming this.
Well, I think it just shows a misunderstanding of what road racing is. You know, road racing is about crossing the line first, and that can be done.
Outsmarting your opponent.
Yeah, it can be done in any number of ways. And just because I think the average speed of a race has very, very little to do with how hard that race is.
I think my issue with it as well is that the comparison is exactly that, a comparison. And what I think is beautiful about women's road racing is it's not anything in comparison to men's road racing. It's simply women's road racing. It has its own feel, its own tempo, its own rhythm, its own characters. And I think it can be appreciated entirely separately for the men's race. And I don't know that there are too many who would look at, if they're not interested in women's racing, I don't think it's because they feel they're not going fast enough, for example. That there may be any number of reasons, probably a lack of exposure more than anything else. But I don't think we need to justify it on speed necessarily.
I think these numbers often get reeled out as a kind of, well, women should be paid just as much as men. They should be respected just as much as men because they're going as fast as them. But I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, in the case of Flesh Wallone, it was on different roads. So the comparison was even more meaningless. But any any assessment of a road race on the basis of its average speed is meaningless.
Well, it's not anything that we ever look at the end of a road race. Even for men's racing, we don't for 1 second consider whether or not, for example, any of Valverde's wins up the Mur de Huy were better or worse than a previous one because of the speed. It's got absolutely nothing to do with it. It's how he has managed to outfox everyone else, where he made his move, how he made his move, how the team have played the race. It's all of those different factors, I think, rather than the speed, isn't it?
Yeah, or you know, a world championship or an Olympic road race. Mm. You know, the women's race can often be more exciting. Mm. And that has nothing to do with the speed. So let's not go down that road. Especially
for the first hour of all the...
Well, yeah.
Because, I mean, La Course, there was this stat put out about the last... Was it the last 5K of La Course last year up the Col d'Izouard? And Annemiek van Vleuten did it in, I think, as fast or faster than the...
Is this a Strava thing?
The men did. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an interesting tidbit, but it doesn't reflect anything.
That is more meaningful, obviously.
Yeah, because it's a bit more of a time trial.
That's her individual effort. But still, I don't think we really want to get into comparing the speed that women go at with the speed that men go at, because it's not really relevant, is it?
No, it's not the same race. Quite literally, it's not the same race, yeah. So...
No. So moving on.
Yeah.
Can I climb down now?
You can. Jump.
Excellent.
Oh, crash.
I'm not as good at that as you are. Well, I'm just a bit, you know, I'm a bit under the weather this year.
You two
are carrying me here.
I tell you what, you should have let us know that you're under the weather, Richard.
Another thing that Amanda Spratt said there, which again echoed something that Ashley Moolman said, was just about Bulls Dolmans, how although the results look like Bulls Dolmans are just carrying on as they were, they're perhaps being a little bit of a false gloss on things, and that the other teams clearly feel that, you know, things are spread a little bit more evenly, and perhaps, you know, someone will come and break that dominance. I mean, I think at the moment it owes a lot to one rider in particular, Anna van der Breggen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great to see the other teams taking it to Bulls Dolmans, and that's what we've been wanting to see for the last few seasons. The fact is still, though, that Bulls Dolmans are still winning, you know, and it's not just Anna van der Breggen, it's Amy Peters who's won as well. It's Chantal Black who's won a World Tour race this year as well. So on the road, there's much more of a battle for sure. But regardless, it's more often than not still a Bulls Dolmans rider who is at least in the top step of the podium and quite often on another step as well.
Because that's the thing. It's also not just the number of victories, but it's the number of riders that are up there in the top 10 in every race. It's just it's incredible in that sense.
A team not doing so well, Wiggle High Five. Elisa Longo Borghini, I think, has been a bit below par. Ashley Moolman mentioned earlier that, you know, in Flash One, they wouldn't take responsibility for chasing because they didn't feel they had a chance of winning. They've not really been firing on all cylinders. Kanya SRAM have been riding well, aggressively, but perhaps not in those three races that we've had recently. Up there as much as they would have liked.
Elisa Longo Borghini has been ill, so she's been suffering from flu. There seems to have been a flu that was going around the female peloton there during the classics. So she had to sit out a few races. I think Flanders, she sat out anyway. But maybe that also shows, you know, if one rider on another team, say, for example, Canyon Tram, certainly Bowles, were to be ill, you've still got enough cards to play, you know, and not all teams have that strength and depth that the very, very top ones do.
And Wiggle also have a lot of track riders who would have been distracted by world champs. And then, like, Amy Cure did amazingly well in the on the track at the Commonwealth Games. So they have successes, but not... They haven't been having the successes on the road and not necessarily in team colours.
And a few changes in the back room at Wiggle High Five. Donna Ray Zielinski, who was their DS. We had her on the podcast last year. Very interesting woman. But she was fired over the off-season from the team. Rochelle Gilmore ringing the changes at Wiggle High Five. Alan Davis, the former professional male rider, is new sports director there. That seems to have ended in... Not great circumstances, that relationship between Ray Zielinski and Wiggle High Five. So, you know, maybe those changes have had an effect on the road as well.
Well, I think it's always, whenever there's a change, it's going to take a bit of time to adapt. And especially with, I mean, someone as key as Donna, who was really a figure that could unite people and get people, everyone on the same page, keep morale high. And when someone like that leaves, then it is going to... take a bit of time to adapt to a new way of doing things, especially when it, you know, a DS absolutely affects how a race is done, you know, what spirit a race is done, and when someone comes in and has a different way of doing that, then it takes some time to adapt, and then results will also take longer to get.
The Gold Coast Commonwealth Games, biggest event in the cycling year, of course. Close to my heart, the Commonwealth Games.
Did you finish?
But we
need to stop
we have a letter, an audio letter. What is this? Explain this.
Well,
Orla.
So I didn't really get to follow any of the Commonwealth Games because of the time difference. I've been busy with work and whatnot. So I was keen to find out
work and whatnot, launching her own breakaway podcast.
Yeah, my own breakaway podcast. I'm allowed to mention that.
Go on.
I'll be doing some interviews actually that will cross over with the Cycling Podcast Femina. Yeah, I've launched my own podcast, When Orla Met.
Okay, that's enough.
You didn't even let me finish the title of it. When Orla Met. It's a sports interview podcast. Very different. It's not in competition. But if you like sports interviews or sports related interviews, if you like stories, just human stories, have a listen.
Have a listen after you've listened
subscribe.
To this.
Yeah, when you finish this one.
This is When Orla Met Richard and Rose. And what a great time she had.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to get you on it.
Oh.
Yeah, excellent. We're going to have an in-depth chat. I'm going to dig beneath those Scottish layers and find out what's underneath them. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Stop.
Maybe it won't. Maybe it won't. Anyway. So, yeah, so I've been a bit busy.
I'm like
so
iron brew it. Made from girders.
We'll see what's beneath that. Tough, steely exterior.
Beneath this doer exterior is a doer interior.
So that'll be the most disappointing episode of When Orla Met. But no, I've got Sarapi McCoy, the champion jockey. I've got Pippa York in my next episode, formerly Robert Miller, of course. She was absolutely brilliant. Oh, we could run a little bit of her, actually, on Cycling Podcast Femina if we wanted. I've got lots of... I've got Mark Cavendish. I've got Lizzie Dagnan coming up and lots of non-cyclists as well. But so I wanted to know how the Commonwealth Games had gone from the point of view of someone down there. And so I thought, aha, friend of the Cycling Podcast Femina, Tiffany Cromwell, who we absolutely love here. So I asked her if she would come on. She was really keen to come on, but unfortunately, with her travel, she stayed on a little bit after the Commonwealth Games. And she's just coming up north to the Northern Hemisphere today. So she was stopping off in Dubai, and I had the little idea of sending her a series of questions via voice notes, which she kindly agreed to take part in. So it's a bit of an unusual way to interview someone. I sent her the voice notes yesterday. She replied when she was in Dubai today. So I'm not sure where she was, if she was at the airport, I presume so, on her way back up here. This is Tiffany Cromwell talking about the Commonwealth Games and what's coming up next for her. Tiffany, thank you for agreeing to this rather unconventional way of doing an interview. Firstly, congratulations on the Commonwealth Games gold. You were team captain, of course, for Chloe Hosking, giving her the final lead out that launched her to the line for the win. Talk us through that race, if you don't mind, and just how much that gold medal meant, especially after Chloe's crash in Flanders the day before she was due to fly over there.
Thanks very much for having me back on the Cycling Podcast. Yeah, so obviously the Commonwealth Games, it was a very, very special race, you know. I don't think it quite hit home how special it would be until I landed back in Australia. We couldn't have asked for, you know, a better race from the plan to how we executed it to the way that the team rode to having Chloe win the gold. Yeah, it was, you know, a different type of field to what we're perhaps used to, you know, definitely a much smaller field and a different dynamic with a number of track riders in there and not a lot of riders who we'd perhaps know so much about and used to race in week in, week out back in Europe. But it meant it had an added element to, you know, working out the tactics and how we want to race our race and what possible surprises we might be faced with. The course itself was... It was a good course. In the end, it was quite suburban, starting and finishing along the beachfront, but there was, you know, a couple of short but quite steep climbs, so it made selective enough without it being too difficult that completely blew the peloton apart. We went in with a very, very strong plan. You know, we wanted to make the race hard. We didn't want to just roll around for a sprint because there was a couple of track riders in there in particular who we knew could potentially have a fast finish, so we preferably wanted to get rid of them before the final. So yeah, it was, you know, the goal was to ride those climbs in the middle quite hard, control any breakaways, and, you know, if we need to send someone with a move, we were covering all those bases and then give a perfect lead out for Chloe. Obviously, as team captain, my role was to, you know, look after things, make the difficult calls if they had to be made, and my one most important role was that final lead out to take her from about 300 go to 150, and, you know, the girls did an incredible job. We still had four riders in the last eight, I think it was, and it was a pretty stiff headwind coming along that beachfront as we did the last 600 metres to the line, and Kat Garfield put in a huge turn. You know, we knew we could rely on her with her time trial skills, and then Sarah Roy took over, and then the Welsh came up on our left, and I did get worried for a moment because they started to come over us, and that was the point where I knew I had to go, and luckily, you know, they had mistimed it because of the strong headwind. I was able to claw back and get Chloe up to that 150 metre to go, and then when she launched, you know, there was no coming back, and you know, it truly was, you know, a team performance, and like everyone pitched in. You know, there was an incredible atmosphere between us girls. You know, the team that we had there, I'd probably never been on an Australian team with that kind of good dynamic before, and yeah, it's just so nice to be a part of and to share with those girls.
For anyone in the Northern Hemisphere who wasn't able to watch much of the games live, or for those from elsewhere who don't really actually follow them, how were the Commonwealth Games, and how much does a medal there, and gold in particular, matter to you and to the rest of the team?
Yeah, so I think I touched on how the Commonwealth Games were a little bit just before, but, you know, Commonwealth nations know how big the Commonwealth Games are. They come around once every 4 years, so it's similar characteristics of the Olympics. There's the village, everyone has a different event, you come together, you interact with different nationalities, and yeah, the general public know that. You talk to them and you might say you race Tour of Flanders, you might race Liège or any of the big cycling races, and they won't know what that are. Whereas you talk to the average person on the street and you say, oh, I went to Commonwealth Games, they know what that is.
So I know you're on your way back up to Europe very shortly. What's next on the agenda for you? What are your upcoming targets?
Yeah, as we're speaking, I'm halfway or three quarters of the way back to Europe. I just flew home from Adelaide to Dubai overnight, and I'm just in Dubai for the day having the last little bit of relax before on to Nice tomorrow, and then yeah, back to work, back to my Canyon Tram team. I only have 2 days home, and then I'm up to Luxembourg for GP Elsie Jacobs, so that will be the first race back with the team. Following Luxembourg, I'll be up to the UK for Tour de Yorkshire. This race I'm pretty excited about. You know, it's, I think it's the third edition for the women, and every year it's grown. This year it's a 2-day race, and I hear the second stage is very, very hard, but certainly the first stage I'd like to have a crack at, and you know, I'm very excited for that race because cycling is pretty massive in Yorkshire, and again, it's huge crowds and stuff like that, so I'm really looking forward to that.
And just off the bike, congratulations on your new clothing range, Ode to the Sun with Rafa. I hadn't realised you'd studied fashion, actually. I'd like to know how all of that's gone, but also whether the fact that we're seeing that kind of investment in women's cycling, or certainly at least in a female cyclist, and the branding and the marketing that comes with it is a sign of where we are in the sport now. I don't think we would have seen that a few years ago, would we?
Thank you. Yeah, the Ode to the Sun collection was really exciting to finally get that launch. You know, I studied fashion when I finished school. I never completed it because when I finished school, I also started travelling the world for my cycling, but did study like the fundamentals that I needed for fashion, you know, from pattern making to colour theory to garment construction to computer-aided design. So that kind of gave me the fundamentals to go out and, you know, and have a knowledge of what it takes to sort of develop clothing. And I actually spent a little bit of time working with Cycling Apparel Line many, many years ago, just doing some of the graphic work. So dabbled in doing freelance designs from time to time. So yeah, it's always been an interest of mine. And then, you know, when we partnered with Rafa, very early on, I went to them, I'd say, you know, talked about my interest, said, hey, you know, if there's ever opportunity, I'd love to do something together. And obviously they loved it. They were, you know, really motivated to do something together, and it took a bit of time and a few discussions, and I met with their designers, and then finally we got to the point where we were ready to do something together. And it's exciting for what the, for the women's market. There is more and more out there for female athletes, I think, female cyclists. Definitely 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was very, very limited what women could get. The designs were not so nice. The cuts, there wasn't a great investment into developing things that were for women. I feel like more and more brands are reaching out and they realise there is that gap in the market and there is a need for it. And with more and more women getting onto bikes, they're wanting beautiful kit and kit that fits them as well. So, you know, the likes of Rafa leading the way, and as I said, you know, there's a number of other brands out there that are doing great things, a number of small ones out of Australia as well. So, yeah, it's a growing market and hopefully there'll be more of it, and hopefully this is the first of maybe a few collections that I can do together with Rafa.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our main sponsor at the cycling podcast Femina. You can get your Pedalers de Charme t-shirt at rafa.cc or go to thecyclingpodcast.com shop. We heard just before the break there from Tiffany Cromwell, and before that, Orla gave a plug for her new podcast series. Jonathan, if you just cut that stuff out, that'd be great. Thank you. We heard from Tiffany with her letter from her travels back to Europe. We'll see her back here soon. She's riding Tour de Yorkshire, isn't she, coming up?
She is. Yeah, so I'm going to catch up with her there.
Great. Now, just before we finish this month's episode, a tweet caught my eye over the weekend from Lauren Rowney, the former rider, and as I now know, former DS at Trek Drop. She's started her role there at the start of the year. I hadn't realised that she's actually now left Trek Drop, so that was about 7 or 8 minutes into the call after I'd been asking her about how it was going. bit of a bombshell, but she's left, so that's a shame that it didn't work out there. But she did tweet over the weekend about Liège-Bastogne-Liège and Flèche Wallonne, both races organised by ASO, of course, who organised Tour de France, Paris-Roubaix and other major races. Lauren asked, could someone please help me understand why it is that the UCI continues to support ASO races? This is UCI Women's World Tour. As World Tour races, when clearly they don't give a damn, year after year with the same old question, why is there no coverage? Well, it was a very good question, so I called up Lauren and just asked what prompted her to tweet that, because people complain a lot about the lack of TV coverage of Flèche Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège and the general uncertainty, confusion over La Course and what it is and you know, the format and so on. And there is this bigger question about ASO's care for women's cycling, how much they really are invested in it, how much they want to promote it, and you know, whether those races should actually be Women's World Tour races. So here's some of what Lauren had to say.
Look, I think where some of the frustration stems from is a few things. One, I'm an ex-rider, so I understand how important it is for sponsors in the sport to have more racing live. The fact that fans are demanding it, as well as, you know, us riders, the teams. But the thing with the ASO, and I guess I don't have a grudge against them, but I definitely dislike them more from working alongside them last year. So nothing was really mentioned about the live coverage. And every time we brought it up in a Skype conversation with one of the ASO people, it was kind of like, oh, yes, there'll be more on that. There'll be more on that. Then the day came where I was at Flèche Wallonne and it was like, all right, I showed up to the start-finish area and I thought, okay, are we having any live coverage? And then they said, no, there's not going to be. Like, there is a motorbike out there, but we won't be showing anything. And I tried to understand why. The guy who was sort of in charge of my role was like, well, the TV stations just don't want it, so we can't sell it to them, so that's it. Story done. A lot of riders do share the same opinion. I mean, I did a podcast with Ashley Moorman last year on Vox Women, and she was saying the same thing, like, why do we continue to support these races that don't support us when we have 2.2 races or 2.1, like the Healthy Aging Tour, which are investing the money and showing the races live?
From your dealings with the ASO, did you feel there was anybody there who really cared about women's racing?
No, it's just that it's still that French old school mentality. It's a boys' club. And it just feels like nothing's going to... They're like Evil Corp. Nothing seems to be changing.
If the women don't get anything really from ASO, you know, would it be feasible, do you think, that they would vote with their feet and not take part in these events?
So you have the Cycling Alliance, whereas the union for the women's peloton, and they would like to see a union happen for the team side of things. So it would be where the team owners and the directors came together and basically came up with what they wanted to achieve for the sport. I guess if that was the case and we could form this union for the teams, then we could say, we're all going to stand together. We're not going to support these races because they're giving us nothing in return for the sport. And then basically go to the UCR and say, we don't want these races in the World Tour.
And they're races that have the potential to be very, you know, meaningful and to have a big audience. And we've seen the viewing figures for some of the races that have been broadcast this year, and they're very encouraging. You know, there's an opportunity that ASO don't seem to want to grasp.
Indeed, and that's why I think it's bullshit that they say that, you know, that the races don't get the views, because like you said, the ratings are there. It's evident that people want to watch these races, and it complements what's happening in the men's races, because I don't know about you, but really I only tune in with about 100Ks to go. I mean, show the women's race during, before, and then feed into the men's race, and then you have a nice afternoon of viewing.
So Lauren, they're sort of suggesting that, you know, the only meaningful action to take would be to vote with your feet and for the top teams and riders not to actually ride the ASO supported organized races until things like TV coverage are taken care of. I mean, over the last week we've had an Amstel Gold race, Flesh Flown, Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Amstel Gold was excellent again, and a lot of riders last year said that Amstel Gold, which was a new race in the Women's World Tour last year, was really good. It was well organized, well supported, there was TV coverage, and some effort seemed to have gone into putting on a good race for the women. Whereas things are sadly lacking, not just in the lack of TV coverage, but in other areas too, in the ASO races, it does seem.
But it's so difficult because, I mean, a lot of the smaller races, like Lauren says, a lot of the smaller races can get a helicopter up, can get several motos in the race, and ASO really has no, and a lot of, you know, people say, oh, TV production is so expensive, and ASO really have no excuse because they're the ones with all the money. And I think sometimes the UCI can be a little weak in coming down hard on ASO because ASO have so much power. Having the Tour de France, it means that you control so much of cycling by just having one race, but like the biggest race. So I think they can be a little bit of a light touch when it comes to the ASO.
There's no consistency across the ASO races anyway. We've got the Tour de Yorkshire coming up, which will be, as I understand, live streamed at least. It may be live on TV as well, the women's race. But certainly you will be able to follow it live. That's an ASO race, but that to me appears to be down to Gary Verity more than anything else. So the race organiser. So when you look at Flesh, or you look at Liège, Bastogne-Liège, that's the race organiser who is not putting that on. ASO are allowing them to do that. They're allowing them to get away with it. And in turn, UCI are allowing ASO to not put the pressure on the race organisers. I mean, it's a struggle to even find what the exact criteria is for it to be a Women's World Tour race. I've been trying to find what the media requirements are. All I can see is newspaper reports and magazine reports on what it is. I can't find an article actually on the UCI's website itself, but there was an article from a few years back talking about what was then the new Women's World Tour, and it looks like the expectation was that for a race to be Women's World Tour, that they're expected to provide live TV or streaming of the event or a highlights package. Now, there is a massive, massive difference between live streaming and a highlights package, because the highlights packages aren't even 10 minutes long. I mean, we were talking about some of the highlights of the Ardennes races, and you wouldn't even have known that Ashley Milman-Passio was taking part in some of the races, and never mind animating them in the way that she was. If you're relying on somebody else's interpretation of the race, so in my mind, it's just not good enough. There's no reason that Flesh and Liège can't exist as races. I personally think it's a good thing. I really do. And I think they're wonderful races. And I keep going back to this issue of narrative. And it's an easy narrative to follow when there is a history to the men's race. You can transpose that to an extent onto the women's race. But they don't have to be World Tour races. And you can withhold that status until they provide live streaming. It's really not difficult. And as you say, we keep saying how expensive television production is. Television production is very, very expensive to do well. However, cheap live streaming is cheap. You stick a camera however basic that camera might be, onto one motorbike that follows the race. And if that's the only angle you've still got an angle of the race. Then we can improve on that. But that in itself is really not expensive. And there is no excuse for not doing that other than sheer laziness and not giving enough importance to women's racing. And the UCI, if a race organiser is not giving enough importance to a women's race, why on earth do they have World Tour status? It's up to the UCI.
And it also begs the question, what does it mean to be a women's World Tour race? Because they've also got this situation this year when they've got Tour of California, which is a women's World Tour race, going on at the same time as Bira, I think. And so you've got so many teams, big teams, Bols Dolmans, for instance, where the defending champion of Tour of California is Anna van der Breggen. She's not even going to defend her title. And so when you've got overlapping races and races which aren't, that don't look the same, they don't have the same organisational standards, then what does it mean to be a women's World Tour race? Would it not be better to be a really well organised race like Healthy Ageing Tour that isn't Women's World Tour?
And the frustrating thing is, you know, in speaking to Amanda Spratt and Ashley Moulman-Passio and hearing from them how those races unfolded, especially Liège-Bastogne-Liège, actually, because that sounded like a really exciting finale, those last three or four climbs. There was a lot of things happening. You know, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot was away, there was counter-attacking behind her, there were groups splitting. It sounded really exciting. It's a shame that the Tour of Flanders was the race that we were able to watch, because it was the least exciting. You know, Anna van der Breggen went away quite early and won the race. Liège-Bastogne-Liège sounds like a real cracker, but, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and nobody's around here, it doesn't make a sound. Now, our old pal, Dan Van Reith, a professor at University of Leuven, he tweets a lot. He's our old pal.
Our old pal already, yeah.
You mentioned him in the last podcast. I make him our old pal.
Spoken to him, never met him, but we make friends very easily.
I actually emailed him the other day because I thought he'd be an interesting guy to get on the podcast. He declined the invitation, but...
that's how our old pals treat us.
He did send me a very interesting...
So he's an old pal, not a current one.
Former friend.
He did send me a very interesting paper that he's written about this, but he tweeted about the TV audiences for the women's Amstel Gold race in Flanders on Sporza. 502,000 people watched live coverage of the women's Amstel Gold race. That was 76% of the audience for the men's
502,000. Is that, now I am quite across television figures, and these days that is a huge audience. Half a million.
Let's hope it's accurate. In the Netherlands, only 1,000 more watched the women's race than they watched the men's race on Eurosport in the Netherlands. It was quite a small audience, but more people watched the women's race than the men's race. And in Denmark, 39,000 people watched the women's race, which seems like a pretty good figure as well.
I feel like as well we should maybe caveat our earlier protestation that we shouldn't be comparing men's and women's racing. Yeah. Now we're comparing the viewing figures, but I think this is much more relevant.
Different.
I know it is.
That's interesting, Richard. But what speed were they doing?
I'm comparing the interest. I'm comparing the interest in it.
Maybe that's why they had more viewers though, because it lasted longer because they were going more slowly, so we had more time to watch.
No, but the point is that you put it on and people will clearly watch it. Now listen, we heard from Tiffany Cromwell, who left us voice messages. You can now leave us a voice message. For the podcast Femina.
I'm really excited about this. I can't wait. Now, if I was a listener, I'd be straight on.
Yeah.
I might do it anyway.
Yeah.
I'll put on my best
Scottish accent. Hello, it's Flirty McKay here.
Hello, it's... I can't even think of a Scottish name.
You're falling at the first hurdle.
Yeah. It's Iona Shinoa.
Iona Bike. it's okay.
Oh no!
Okay,
it's Iona McBike here.
Let's have some calm here. The number to call, don't call it though. Don't phone us up because nobody will answer. Is +44 797 1338 205. That's +44 797 1338 205. Now, what you have to do, what we can accept on that number are basically WhatsApp voice messages. So you have to add the phone number to your contacts, open WhatsApp, open a new chat, and then press and hold the microphone and we'll get your message. So please do send us some messages.
It's like an old answering machine.
I know.
It is. Yeah, just
a little bit retro.
Tell us what you think, and if it's broadcastable, we may well broadcast it next month. That's all, I think, for this month. Anything else to declare?
Nothing else to declare. I'm still not
pregnancy.
Pregnant.
Yeah. During
Are
the program.
You Richard? Are you pregnant?
No.
You're all right.
I'm not.
We're just establishing everybody's level of.
Yeah. You are showing, but well, you're not pregnant.
I'm a bit worried about where that question might be coming from. Anyway, just straighten my back. Where are you off? You're off to the Tour de Yorkshire?
I'm hopefully off the Tour of Yorkshire, as long as I'm not sent on a last-minute mission to the Giro d'Italia. But I should be off to the Tour de Yorkshire. I'll catch up with Tiffany Cromwell, certainly. Lizzie Deignan, who I'm also interviewing in depth for my own podcast.
Oh, my God.
and whoever else is there, I'll try to grab Anna van der Breggen. Danny Rowe is going to be there. Chantal Black, I think, is going to be there. It is a stellar field at the Tour de Yorkshire. So hopefully I'll gather some interesting material from up north.
Great. Off anywhere, Rose?
Maybe Yorkshire as well, actually.
Oh, see you there.
Maybe Yorkshire, and then I'm doing the men's Giro d'Italia. I'm not even allowed if... Not sure I'm allowed to even say that on the podcast Feminine.
No, I'm doing that as well. Don't worry.
There you go. Well, I'll see you out there.
Well, see you there.
I'm staying true to the cause then. Sticking with women's cycling.
Well, we'll reconvene.
Unless I'm pulled for the Giro.
Yeah. And then we'll just meet up there.
See you all at the Giro and we'll talk about women's cycling.
Well, wherever we happen to be, let's reconvene in a month or less than a month and... do the next podcast Feminine, shall we?
Oh, let's do it.
In the meantime, thank you, Orla.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Rose.
Thanks very much, guys.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.